Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
A couple of months ago, I spoke to James Sikora from the Irish Veterans Association, and he told us the story of Lieutenant Michael P. Murphy, who was a U.S. Navy SEAL who received the Medal of Honor and had a U.S. Navy ship, the USS Michael Murphy, a destroyer named after him in 2011. And with a name like Michael Murphy, he obviously had very strong Irish connections. And this weekend in Kinsale, representatives of the U.S. Navy and the U.S. ambassador to Ireland are unveiling a plaque to him. So to mark that, I'm joined in studio by Captain Duncan Smith, the senior Navy SEAL, who is here for the unveiling and is going to tell us the story, hopefully, of Michael Murphy. You're very welcome, Captain Smith.
Well, thank you very much for having us, Ryan.
Very good. You arrived in when from the U.S.?
Just yesterday.
Okay, so you're fresh off the plane. So, but you're looking fresh, so you're all right.
I'm hoping so. A bit jet lagged, but a good workout this morning helped.
Good. Okay. Did you really have a workout already this morning?
I did.
What time were you up at?
About 6, which was probably my midnight, something like that, okay. Or my 10 p.m.
But you're a Navy SEAL.
Yes.
And can you define what a Navy SEAL is for us? And don't forget, we're a neutral country, but we are familiar with what Navy SEALs are to an extent, but pretty vaguely. So could you define it first?
Absolutely. A Navy SEAL is a part of the United States Special Operations Community. So we're commandos, if you will. We're the Navy's Special Operation Branch, and we're the maritime component within the Special Operations world throughout the U.S. military. We're known for having what many people refer to as the toughest military training in the world. That's debatable, certainly, but I can tell you going through it and being a father of a young SEAL who's now serving, it is demanding. And it's one of the things that we pride ourselves on. It creates kind of a band of brothers, if you will. We have every officer and every enlisted man. It's the only branch of the military where both officers and enlisted go through the exact same crucible. And it really culminates in the early phases with something called Hell Week, where you're awake in a simulated combat environment, literally for a week.
For 6-7 days?
For 6 days, yeah. You'll try to cheat a quick 15-minute nap here or there, as you might be on a 12-mile ocean paddle in a rubber boat. A lot of us will say, hey, Jones, grab a nap, and Callahan, take a minute, and I'm going to keep a vigilant eye and keep paddling. But yeah, you're essentially awake for a six-day period.
Okay, is that physically possible?
It's surprisingly possible, but what it does is it separates out very quickly those who are there because it sounds like a good idea,
and
those who really have the heart and the soul. One of the things that Michael Murphy is known for is, he was a tremendous athlete as he grew up in New York. He's obviously of Irish ancestry with a name like that. His mother, Maureen, both her parents were born in Ireland and then emigrated to the U.S. where she was born. But, he not only typified the athletic side, which is where we see most of our young SEALs come into the Navy from, but he also had the heart and the soul to put up through things like Hell Week, which are very demanding.
What else happens in Hell Week to give it such a menacing name?
Well, you're cold and wet the entire time. You work as a crew of 7, so you're in boat crews. Everywhere you go, you take your what we call IBSs, inflatable boat small, and that boat is with you, and your six boat crew members are with you the entire time. Yeah. And everything's a competition. So you might be running with boats on your head from our base in Coronado, California, down to the Mexican border, which is about 11 miles, and then hop back in the ocean, take the boats to the surf, and paddle back to Coronado, and it pays to be a winner. First team back gets to sit down for 15 or 20 minutes until the next team comes in.
God, little did you know that would be considered a prize in any competition.
it's interesting how humbling it can be, and it's also interesting to see who you think would absolutely make it no matter what, and yet sometimes they quickly leave the program, and sometimes the very average-looking guy has a heart and a soul and a mental toughness that has him last through all aspects of training.
Why did you want to be a Navy SEAL?
You know, for a lot of people, I think it's patriotism. For me, I joined before 9/11. I've been in 29 years now. So for me, it was really adventure. I grew up enjoying backpacking and kayaking and was doing triathlon and cross-country skiing and that kind of thing. And so for me, I wanted to kind of test myself. And it's grown into something where it's a labor of love. I enjoy serving my nation and serving others, and I like the leadership aspects. Mm. And I think for me, what's really kept me in the teams, and that's how we refer to ourselves in the SEAL teams, is the brotherhood, the camaraderie. Mm. There's nothing I've seen in my life that replicates how close you are with other people, because no one can really understand you unless they've been through that same training.
You know, if you look, I can only talk about pop culture and things like the Band of Brothers, mm-hmm. the TV show, which I'm sure you watch with great interest. Mm-hmm. And you do see that bond there, because you're in the horrors, both, and you can see that for the other side, whoever they may be. That this sort of thing happens, that you gel.
You do gel, and you learn to anticipate and rely on each other. You work together constantly so that, you know, you and I wouldn't need to communicate as to what we're going to do. We know exactly, you're going to move left, I'll move right. I'll make sure you have an extra magazine of ammo, and, you know, we just kind of move on that way. Yeah. We also have a sense of humor that I think people underestimate. Things that, you know, you could be cold, wet, and miserable, but I think I've laughed harder at those moments in my life than I have at any other time.
Well, I was taught that you find humor in the darkest corners.
I think that's true. Yeah.
Because it's the only thing you have sometimes.
Absolutely.
Can you say what countries you've seen action in, or are you in a position to do that?
Well, I've deployed to Iraq and I've deployed to Afghanistan, but I've been in 37 countries up to this point in my life. Most of those service in the Navy.
Right. Okay. So you've been around. And can you explain those, you know, the little colored badges that you have on your? Can you point to them?
Sure.
And tell me what each one, because we'll take a picture shortly and we'll show people at home.
Well, these are ribbons, and ribbons signify medals. No, that's absolutely right. They we also call them toss salad or fruit salad sometimes.
Okay.
Because they have that appearance with the different colors.
Right, okay.
Each symbolizes either a different campaign or a different expertise or a recognition for doing something a little bit above and beyond.
Yes.
Below that are my master parachutist wings. So a general military parachutist has silver wings, or what we call lead wings. Once you become a military freefall parachutist in the SEAL team, you get gold wings, which are a little bit bigger. And then up above is the SEAL trident. And to us, this is something that's very, very important. It's more than a trident. It signifies the areas in which we operate. So we are SEAL teams, which comes from sea, air, and land. And so there's a pistol for ground combat, a trident to represent the notion that we work beneath the water.
Yeah.
The eagle signifies that we operate and can insert from the air as a parachutist. And then the anchor really talks about our Navy heritage, because we are a part of the United States Navy and very proud to be sailors and officers in the Navy.
And then the ribbons?
The ribbons, each one is, like this is a Defense Meritorious Service Medal, Meritorious Service Medal, National Defense, Combat Action Ribbon. As we move through different campaigns for Iraq, marksmanship ribbons, each one tells a slightly different story. So as you come in, it's a bit like having your resume on your sleeve, and I can see that you've been to the Afghan theater and that you, you're an expert rifleman, an expert pistol shot, that kind of thing.
So if you're in the military, whatever discipline, you can look at that and say, you can look at somebody's, essentially their blazer and see their history.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you're wearing shamrock cufflinks.
I am wearing shamrock.
Why is that?
It's funny.
Did you earn them in the Battle of, you know, Bandon and Bantry Bay?
I did not. I wish I had a better story about these, but these are pretty special cufflinks. I made a trip to Ireland. My family, like a lot of people in the military, is of Irish descent, and so my great 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 grandmother was from Cork, and I always wanted to go back and see Cork, and had the opportunity to do a whirlwind 4-day trip with my mother a number of years ago.
Yeah.
And I picked these up at that time, and I told her, she's 93 now. I told her I'd be wearing these on this trip.
Isn't that okay? So you're a bit sentimental at heart after all that.
I think I am a little bit. Maybe too sentimental.
Maybe so. But look, that brings us neatly to the Irish connection with the Navy, and like we were saying before we came on air, that you must have so many guys that you work with down through the years with Irish names, and that's what we're going to talk about today, which is the story of Lieutenant Michael P. Murphy. Can you tell us about him?
Absolutely. Michael Murphy was an exceptional athlete. He grew up in New York, again, of Irish ancestry, was a collegiate athlete as well, and gravitated towards wanting to be a SEAL from a young age. He came in the SEAL teams and was assigned as an officer in charge of a reconnaissance element, a four-man team in Afghanistan, almost 10 years ago, actually, in June 2005. And they were deployed in the Hindu Kush Mountains to observe an enemy compound, looking specifically for one high-value target, one individual. And while they were there, they were compromised or discovered by a group of herders. So three local Afghan herders came upon their hide site, the place that they were observing the enemy outpost from, and they were faced with a very difficult moral dilemma. Once they were compromised, they had to either hold these people there They could kill these three, but that would be in violation of our rules of engagement and be the wrong thing to do. Or they could set them free. And after some discussion, the officer in charge, Lieutenant Michael Murphy, decided to let them go, knowing full well that this was going to put himself and his men in great jeopardy. But they did. They tried to mitigate the risk to that. They set these men free. They immediately tried to move out of the area, but sure enough, the herders ran back, contacted the enemy, and very quickly, Lieutenant Murphy and his three teammates were overwhelmed by a force of 50 of the enemy. A very, very bitter two-hour firefight ensued. It's estimated that between 30 and 35 of the enemy were killed, but each man was wounded severely. In the heat of this battle, without anyone knowing their exact position, because they did not have good communications with the headquarters, Lieutenant Murphy risked his own life, went into a very exposed area where he was receiving enemy fire, and stood up to make a satellite telephone call back to the headquarters asking for a quick reaction force, knowing full well that he was probably going to be hit, and he did. He was shot as he was making the call, dropped the phone, picked it up, continued the call, described where he was, and at that moment, actually, as he lay there, you know, in the process of dying, actually thanked the folks, "Hey, thanks, brother," as he hung up. There was a quick reaction force that was dispatched. It went without an armed helicopter escort, so it was essentially a cargo helicopter that brought 8 U.S. Navy SEALs and 8 Army Night Stalkers to their site. Unfortunately, they were shot down immediately by a rocket-propelled grenade, so 16 men died, plus the 3 who died from Lieutenant Murphy's element. That was the largest single combat death for U.S. Naval Special Operations at that point in time, the largest single combat mortality event following 9/11.
It was a bloodbath.
It was a bloodbath, and one man survived, and that whole story is really told in a film called Lone Survivor, which gives a very accurate depiction. I know Mark Slatrell well, who is the survivor, and you know, the testament that he made about what each of them had done to save each other and to preserve their own lives, but also to carry out their mission, is incredible.
And how did he survive such a scenario?
You know, in the case of Marcus Luttrell, they basically fought and bound down a ravine to get away from the enemy. And as they did, they took a heavy toll on the enemy, but they kept retreating to try to stay alive. And they basically were dropping 20 and 30 feet at a time down a mountainside. A rocket-propelled grenade blew Marcus Luttrell off the cliffside, and he landed unconscious, and the enemy actually never found him. He was later found by local Afghans who took him in and showed the kind of hospitality that their culture binds them to. Right. So they refused to release the one person who lived, Marcus Luttrell, over to the enemy. And those local Afghan villagers took a note that Marcus Luttrell wrote, and they smuggled it out to some Marines at a nearby outpost, actually not that close.
Yeah.
And then eventually he was recovered.
You wonder, we mentioned karma earlier on, was there some, given that the three herders were released, and maybe this was the cosmic way of saying, well, here's your return on that kindness, if you want to call it that. But extraordinary story. And when you, as somebody who's seen so much action around the world militarily, and you hear that story, what do you think about your colleagues? About Michael Murphy and the other four?
Well, I think Michael Murphy is... You know, he might have been like so many people, a great athlete and a person very committed to his family. But what he was called upon to do and what he chose to do really set him apart, even among a community as elite as the Navy SEALs. And it's just an honor to serve in this community and really to serve in the United States Navy beside people, each of whom has a different job, but every job is just as important.
Yeah.
And the professionals that we work with every day, it's pretty humbling. And you mentioned earlier, Ryan, I'm somewhat of a sentimental guy, and I am. And I think as I get older, I look around at all these young people who are doing so much, and not just in the military, but you know, young people who aspire to do difficult things to benefit others always impress me.
So you're here in Ireland today because of the events over the weekend in Kinsale to commemorate Michael Murphy, and you've got two colleagues with you. I don't know if you want to name check them, because they are human as well, apparently.
Absolutely. We have Commander Tamsin Reese, who's a public affairs officer and a surface warfare officer. And then we have Mass Communication Specialist First Class Sean Pratt, both of Irish ancestry, I might add, as we discovered in our cab ride over with Mr. Farley, who brought us by.
Good.
And we are here, but we also are going to be joined by members of the USS Michael Murphy. You know, not only was Michael Murphy recognized by receiving our highest award for valor, the Congressional Medal of Honor, but a U.S. Navy warship, a destroyer, the SS Michael Murphy, was actually commissioned in his honor in New York. And that ship today is on deployment. And we're very honored to have the first commanding officer, Mr. Captain Tom Schultz, as well as the Command Master Chief, Adrian McGowan, and the Sailor of the Year, Petty Officer Hutton, all with us and all present in Kinsale tomorrow, along with the Murphy family, for the ceremony at 1 o'clock.
It's incredible sort of presence from you and your colleagues in Ireland to remember Michael Murphy. It does say something, doesn't it, about who he was and the honor with which you treat him, the respect, I should say.
You know, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think he's a special person. His achievements were special. You know, we're close. I know. Unfortunately, I've been to too many funerals, and some for the gentlemen who were part of the Quick Reaction Force, two who I've worked very, very closely with. But it also says something else. It says something about the Irish people. The fact that, you know, a nation so far away from the United States, you know, granted with very strong ties, takes the time to recognize our people, you know, members of the Navy, a member of the SEAL team, means a lot to us. There's a woman there whose last name is Murphy in Kinsale, who's actually planted a tree at her own expense for every firefighter who was killed in 9/11. There's a gentleman who grew up outside Kinsale who emigrated to the U.S. and became a New York City firefighter. He's now retired, Mr. Danny Manning, who's going to be at the ceremony tomorrow. So we are really honored and touched that members of the Irish community have taken time to notice Michael Murphy and his contribution. And this is really honoring, you know, not just Michael Murphy and his men, but the all the military members, the Army Night Stalkers and the SEALs who lost their lives trying to save him, and all the military veterans of Irish ancestry.
Okay, of which there are so many, the ties that bind. Did you want to say something?
I do want to say something to you. I've got something special for you, Ryan.
Go on.
And that is a... you know, we have a tradition in the United States military.
Bring in Tamsin. So what's her formal title?
Commander McCabe.
McCabe. Bring the commander in to see what she wants to
do. Her maiden name is McCabe, and Reese is her married name. But
well, good morning.
Nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. Thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely.
You were armed with a baseball cap of some description.
This is a ball cap. So every Navy crew has a ball cap, and typically they are navy blue. But this one, you'll notice, Ryan, is Kelly green.
It's proper
and
green.
It's a truly proper green, and it's a cruise cap from the USS Michael Murphy, and it has doubled scrambled eggs. So if you see the gold braid in the front, that would indicate that you have the rank of 4-star admiral, Ryan, and I think that's probably pretty appropriate.
Well, I think, as you'll probably appreciate, Captain Smith, that the respect that my program team, you know, afford me would be of that quality and that caliber. So it was only a matter of time, really, that I was elevated to this status as a colleague of yours. So I'll look you up next time I'm over in the States, all of you.
Please do.
No, it's been great. Thank you, by the way.
Oh, that's our pleasure.
That's a lovely cap. I really like that. I'll treasure that. Thank you very much. Lead the fight, it says.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
Thank you very much indeed, Commander. And it's been very good to have you with us this morning.
My pleasure, Ryan.
And I hope you enjoy your time in Ireland and keep those cufflinks now well to the fore, because people will enjoy seeing those too. So good luck tomorrow to you and your colleagues and all the good people of Kinsale. It's a gorgeous part of the world, as you know. And thanks to James Sikora, who brought this story to our attention in the first instance. And we wish you well.
Thank you so much,
Ryan.
Thank
you so much.